You're listening to the Hockey Podcast Network. New shows every day. Find us at thehockeypodcastnetwork.com or wherever you get your podcasts from.
Welcome to your Canadiens Connection on Rocket Sports Radio. This premier hockey podcast featured at CanadiansConnection.fm brings you the latest news, in-depth analysis, and expert commentary about the NHL's most storied franchise, the Montreal Canadiens. Hosted by Rick Stevens and Amy Johnson. Our team of credentialed journalists provides behind-the-scenes insight on the Canadiens, designed to inform, entertain, and engage Habs fans around the globe. We are proud to be the trusted source for all things Habs for more than a decade. This is the Canadiens Connection Podcast. Well, hello, everyone, and welcome to the Canadiens Connection Podcast right here on Rocket Sports Radio, where each week we are talking about the Montreal Canadiens, keeping you informed, engaged, and entertained all about your favorite NHL franchise. Welcome again. As I say, my name is Amy Johnson. I'm going to be your host on today's show for episode 374 of the Canadiens Connection Podcast titled Adversity Hits Back. Inside the Habs' toughest test yet is getting dicey in November. Let's talk about that a little bit with my wonderful co-host. He's our founder and president here at Rocket Sports. His name is Rick Stevens. Hi, this is kind of like foreshadowing. There's a new sheriff in town and his name is Adversity.
Adversity. And we're not just talking about the winter weather that arrived in Montreal this past week.
So picturesque.
Although I hope you have your snow tires on. Snow possible tonight. Maybe a little bit tomorrow. Do you have your snow tires on down there in balmy Pennsylvania?
Pennsylvania? No.
No? It's, do you ever put snow tires on in Pennsylvania?
No. There are people who live in the northern part of the state, up in the mountains, will do that, but no, I don't have to.
Well, it's a lot here, so it's winter weather, but that isn't what we're talking about. There's other kinds of adversity that arrived in Montreal this week, and fans are in a tizzy, for
yes,
sure.
They are. So here is what you can expect on today's show. In our first segment, we're going to run you through the week that was. We're going to take you back through the three games that the Canadiens have played since our last podcast. We're going to get you updated on some roster news, injury news, wah, wah, wah. A little bit of line shaking up, stuff like that. Of course, we're going to check in with Laval and the Habs prospects, see who's making some headlines there. And then give you some of the top headlines from around the NHL this week. Then, of course, we come back after our first commercial break with our second segment, and that is when we dive into our big topic of the week, a strong dose of adversity. We're going to talk about some injuries, some major injuries that were revealed this week. That's the first big dose of adversity that the Canadiens are now facing. But there's a lot of other things that cropped up this week, a lot of storylines that came to the fore this week. And oddly enough, almost every single one of them lined up with things we discussed on last week's show about the hidden and unseen opponents that players and the organization are facing. Well, those unseen slash hidden opponents reared their ugly heads and became very visible. They are not unseen anymore. They are very seen. So we're going to kind of revisit the things that we talked about last week. And just like that, snap of a finger, within a 4 or 5 days, there's already updates and kind of here's what's happened next with those storylines. We're going to take you through all of that and then look at where do they go from here? Because they can't have another week like they just had this past week. So there's a lot to unpack with what has happened with the Montreal Canadiens in the past 7 days. And we're going to dig into all of that in the second segment. Then we're going to invite all of you to make your voice and opinions heard on things with the state of the Montreal Canadiens with our Canadiens Connection question of the week. And we've got some great responses to last week's question of the week that we're going to bring you as well. So we have a packed show for you today. I hope that you are settled in with a good snack, perhaps, because it's going to get a little spicy, as you say. Let's start with going back and just reviewing what's happened game-wise for the Canadiens since our last show, kicking off with last Saturday's game in Montreal against the Utah Mammoth. And if only last Saturday offensively had set the tone for this past week, the Canadiens, we'd be having a much different show today, because the Canadiens won that game 6-2. They were finding the back of the net left and right, and we'll get into it more in a minute, but maybe they used up all of their goal scoring abilities on that night.
Yeah, it was, it didn't start out that way. It was kind of a low event first period. Shots were, I believe it was 5-4 for the Canadiens. They traded goals. Kyler Yamamoto got Utah on the board first, and then it was Oliver Kapanen. Oliver Kapanen with his sixth goal already to tie it in the first period. It was Lawson Crouse for the Mammoth in early in the second period. And then the Canadiens rattled off five straight goals, couple in the second, and that continued in the third period. Cole Caulfield getting two of those goals, including his 12th of the year. Kirby Dach getting a goal. He's picked things up a little bit. So it was a good night for the Montreal Canadiens. Pretty easy night for Sam Montembeau in net. Nothing too threatening. Although I have to say, he didn't look very confident throughout that game. Fortunately, the Canadiens, as I said, rattled off five goals, won this one pretty handily.
Definitely. What probably came to the surprise of more than a few fans was that Montembeau would then get the start again on Tuesday night. This game, unfortunately, went much differently. I just said that maybe that six goal outing on Saturday, maybe they used up all of their offensive prowess in one shot, because Montreal only managed to score one goal, but LA was able to get off five. And it was actually some familiar names and faces who were making life difficult for the Canadiens.
Yeah, again, it was pretty even in the first period. It wasn't until towards the end of the first period that Josh Anderson, we had talked about Josh Anderson being very quiet. He scored just his second goal of the year, get the Canadiens on the board just before the period expired. And then it was all Los Angeles, five consecutive goals. It was ugly, and it was three quick ones in the second period that sunk the Canadiens, and familiar players, familiar faces, familiar names on the board, as you mentioned, Joel Edmondson, his first of the season for Los Angeles, the long distance goal that, you know, those goals have been plaguing Montembeau. Mm-hmm. Yoel Armia, another familiar guy. He got the fourth Los Angeles goal, where I'd say he embarrassed Lane Hudson and Jaden Struble, who didn't look good on the play. Yoel Armia lifted the stick and went in alone. All in all, and Deneau is there as well. Corey Perry is there as well. A 4-point night for former Canadians in the Los Angeles lineup. Montembeau looked awful in this one. Yeah. 840 save percentage. We've already said it, but maybe you missed that show. Montembeau, and this is from Montembeau himself, says he's not injured. He's not experiencing any discomfort from the injury that put him out in the spring in the playoffs against the Capitals. And so we just want to get that on the table again, because I've seen that excuse coming up over and over and over again. And the other thing, I think we can stop talking about the Olympics. The Olympics are off the table for Sam Montembeau. That's pretty clear. On the other hand, Darcy Kuemper in the lineup for the Kings, Montembeau 840 save percentage in this game, Kuemper 955. He's making his case to be on the Canadian Olympic squad.
So if that wasn't a bad enough evening, let's bring Thursday into the fold. Dallas coming to town. Dallas is not an easy team to play against. Again, this is why I was a little disappointed to not see Dobesh start against LA. And sure, it's not that I don't want Dobesh to play against tough teams. I want him to get all kinds of experience against poor teams and good teams. But he was the one who got the start on Thursday night against Dallas, and Montreal just did not show up at all. They were blanked on home ice by the Dallas Stars, not with Jake Ottinger in goal, by the way, I should mention. It was Casey DeSmith in goal for Dallas. Montreal could not muster a single goal. Dallas found seven.
Wyatt Johnson got it going. His 11th of the season. He has a bunch of them. I'd have to look it up. I think it's 9 power play goals, something like that. And the Dallas power play is deadly. The Montreal penalty kill is awful right now. Mike Matheson was exposed on that Wyatt Johnson goal. He looked terrible. He's trying to transition to be a defensive defenseman. He's trying to transition to be a effective player on the penalty kill. It's just not happening. You had to feel for Jakub Dobesh. The only one I'm going to blame him on, is maybe the 5th goal. And by that time, it was the 2nd goal by Jason Robertson.
Yeah.
Again, a goal a goal from distance. But that was the 5-0 goal. It wasn't a good one. Marty made the decision to bring in Montembeau in the third period. He looked terrible, especially on that first Dallas goal. That would in the third period. That was the 6th goal. Wasn't a high danger shot by any means.
The first shot he faced.
The first shot he faced. He gave up 2 goals on 6 shots, I believe. He looked awful again. It was very ugly,
and took Marty 53 hours to come out and even talk to the press after that game.
Yeah, I
don't know.
Now he said he was strategizing about respect to the injury that was suffered in this game. We're going to talk about that in a minute, but Marty wasn't too anxious to talk to the media. And once he got there, he didn't have a whole lot to offer. He just said that he didn't feel that the 7-0 final score was reflective of the way that he played, but he wasn't sure he wanted to go check the tape.
So I did not envy your task of coming up with 3 stars for this week, because that was a slim margin for choosing, but you did, to your credit, find 3 people who deserve a star this week.
Cole Caulfield in 3 games, 2 goals. He continues on. Those goals both came in the same game, the one against Utah. Oliver Kapanen, I've got him as the 2nd star, 2 points, a goal, and an assist. And respectable at the faceoff dot, 44%. And Alex Newhook, tough news for Alex Newhook, was having a good season and having a pretty good week, a goal and an assist.
And just in passing, we are going to mention that there are a lot of people struggling, but the one thing that you wanted to mention that really stood out and made the big difference in terms of what's struggling this week?
Yeah, last week I kind of identified some individual players who have been struggling. This week I'm just going to point out special teams. Canadians' special teams have to be better. The power play is...
Fell off a cliff.
It absolutely fell off a cliff. They couldn't make a pass. Interesting, I found it really interesting against Dallas that they smothered Ivan Demidov, and for a young player, a rookie, to get that much attention shows how effective that he has been. Mm-hmm. And also shows that Marty St. Louis was kind of caught with his pants down. This is something they should have anticipated, that a lot of attention would be focused on Demidov and have a plan to exploit that. If Demidov's getting a lot of attention, that's not a bad thing.
No.
You've got other players on the ice that should be able to take advantage of it. The Canadians haven't. And the penalty kill has not been very good this season. And they have a hole to fill with respect to Alex Newhook, who won't be there going forward.
So through 17 games played, the Canadians miraculously sitting with a 10-5-2 record. Those 22 points make them first in the Atlantic and sixth overall in the NHL. But there is only going to be so long that they can ride those glorious numbers from October before things start to catch up with them.
Yeah, and I think you have to put into context how bad these two home losses were. We mentioned 5-1 to Los Angeles, 7-0 to Dallas.
In 48 hours.
That's right. Two consecutive home games. The 7-0 was the largest home shutout since moving to the Bell Center in 1996.
All right.
So that's pretty not good. That's pretty significant that you're setting a 30-year record there. But even more significant is when you combine those two games, those two home losses, Montreal losing by a combined score of 12-1 to Los Angeles and Dallas, back-to-back home games, that's the worst goal differential in a span of two games at home ever in Canadiens history, in Canadiens franchise history, that we know how long that is. The worst goal differential in a span of two games at home. That is incredible. There's other parts of it. The Canadians now are 1-2-2 in their last five games. They've lost four of the past five, in other words, and the power play has gone 11 straight advantages without scoring. So there's a lot happening here. It's not in the right direction, and it's a little bit more than just these past two games.
That's right. So, in roster news, on Friday, the Canadians, I even said, we were talking about this when the injury news came out, we were saying, okay, who's going to be the call-up? Is it going to be Beck? Is it going to be Davidson? Well, it's Davidson. Canadians recalling 23-year-old forward Jared Davidson from the Laval Rocket. We have talked about him in past weeks, that he's having a phenomenal start to his season in the AHL with 11 points so far in his 13 games with the Rocket.
Yeah, leads the Rocket, 9 goals, second in points. Going to make his NHL debut on Saturday night against the Bruins. Who is Jared Davidson? You haven't been following Laval. You didn't follow his junior career. Simply he has earned this call up. Mm-hmm. He's a guy who is a shooter. He's got a heavy shot. He's got a very quick release. He's a guy that's certainly feisty his play. He'll go to the dirty areas. He'll stand up for his teammates. We've seen that. He's a leader, definitely, on and off the ice in Laval. I think it's going to be interesting to see. He's been working on his skating in the off season. I'd still rate it as below NHL average, but we'll see how he he keeps up in his NHL debut.
Unfortunately, the reason for Jared Davidson's call-up is because of the Habs losing Alex Newhook for a significant amount of time. This was in the Dallas game on Thursday night. Canadians announcing on Friday that Newhook had surgery at Montreal General Hospital on Friday for a fractured ankle and is expected to be out for 4 months. We're looking mid-February, maybe, when he'll be back?
Well, fortunately, the break, yeah, it'll be into mid-March. But the break is in there, which is, you know, maybe he'll miss fewer games that way. The Olympic break I'm talking about. And the incident was ugly. Got a little trip from Ilya Lyubushkin, the Stars defenseman. Went feet first. His right ankle turned the wrong way. Mm-hmm. You saw Kapanen go right over to him. And there was some brief communication. And right away, Kapanen turned to the bench and called for Jim Ramsey, the trainer, to come out. And he was not putting any weight on the right side. Marty St. Louis wasn't willing to say anything, said that Newhook was being evaluated, but not hard to figure out. You know, the x-rays come back pretty quick that his ankle was fractured. And we got a clue in the post game on Thursday night. Brendan Gallagher said he really feels for Nui and that we're going to be without him for a bit. Was the phrase that Brendan Gallagher. So we knew that this was serious. We knew even before the Canadiens' announcement on Friday that it was going to be bad news. Mm-hmm. And in particular, because you know, Newhook, since arriving with Montreal, has been looking to find his place, looking to find his game, looking to find some consistency, and he seemed to have found that. 12 points, 17 games this year, and really found his place with two young guys, Oliver Kapanen and Ivan Demidov, two rookies. That line has been one of the most effective lines, not only for the Canadiens, but in the NHL.
Very unfortunate. We hope that he has a speedy and successful recovery. Unfortunately, that wasn't the only injury news. Caden Gooley has been out with injury for a little bit of time here already, but at the same time that they announced the Newhook surgery on Friday, the Canadiens also announced that Caden Gooley had undergone surgery. This one was in New York City to repair a partially torn adductor muscle on Thursday, and he's going to miss another 8 to 10 weeks. So we're looking January.
So he hasn't played since October 16th. So he's missed 4 weeks approximately since being injured. You're going to add another 8 to 10 weeks to that. He's only played 5 games so far this season for Montreal. Got 2 points, a goal, and an assist, plus one differential. This is, well, if you've been here, you've heard me drone on and on about this. Caden Gooley, maybe not the number one defenseman, but the most important defenseman on the Montreal Canadiens, because, you know, you like to talk about unicorns. The Canadiens have no one else like Caden Gooley. They have no one else, in Laval, in Montreal, who can replace Caden Gooley. He's a defensive defenseman. He's a physical defenseman. He's a leader. And they just don't have anyone else who plays like him. They have no one who's outside of Arber Xhekaj, who's willing to play physically, and certainly not with the competence level of being a defensive defenseman. You know, Mike Matheson's trying to transition. It's not working. Gooley is really important, and this is big. This is a big loss for the Canadiens.
Definitely. So with the Newhook injury, Davidson being recalled, and the record-setting trouble that the Canadiens had gotten themselves into through those two games played this week. Saturday morning for pregame skate, saw some new forward lines. Marty's having to do some rearranging. And so top line is still the same.
Yeah, top line's still the same. Suzuki between Caulfield and Slavkovsky. We'll just mention kind of as we're going here, Slavkovsky was in the doghouse this week.
Yeah.
Certainly against the LA Kings. We saw him off the power play. We saw a power play arrangement with two defensemen, Hudson and Dobson, and that was because Slavkovsky was yanked for a bit. He missed a shift or two on the top line. Anyway, he was back on Thursday night and will be back on Saturday night on that top line. But that was the first crack showing. Mm-hmm. But maybe Slavkovsky got the message there. The real debate and interest was in what would happen. You know, as I said, Kapanen, Demidov, and Newhook have been one of the best lines. And so there was a lot of, we talked about it last week, about everyone wanting to replace Kapanen. But with such chemistry between Demidov and Kapanen, Marty St. Louis has chosen to replace Newhook with Doc. So he'll be on the second line with Kapanen, Demidov. Evans centers the third line between Anderson and Zach Bolduc. And Valeno, we even saw Valeno on the power play, which was really odd. He hasn't
We're going to talk about
scored,
that more
yeah.
in the next segment.
Davidson making his debut with Valeno and Gallagher on the fourth line. Defense pairings are going to stay the same. And a familiar face in the Gulf. Well, Marty's got his favorites. He certainly does. And it's Montembeau in the net against the Bruins. That's his third start in the last four games.
And I'll relay my frustrations with that choice in the next segment when we kind of get into things a little bit more. But I think that's the wrong decision. All right. I digress. So let's instead get back on track and check in on the Habs prospects.
It's time for the Rocket Report. The Rocket Sports Media Team is your premier source for information about the Laval Rocket, the AHL affiliate of the Montreal Canadiens, as well as Habs prospects playing in the CHL, NCAA, and leagues around the world.
So this week's prospect who's playing outside of the AHL or the ECHL that we want to highlight is goaltender. A goaltender.
Yeah.
Quentin Miller. Quentin Miller, 20-year-old from Montreal.
Mm-hmm.
6'3", 190.
He knows about snow tires, I'm
sure. You may recall he was a fourth-round draft pick in 2023. We've talked about him a lot in the last couple of years because he's bounced around a little bit, but right now he's playing for the University of Denver, Rick, and he's, boy, something has changed.
Yeah, he missed most of last season due to injury, but his first year in the NCAA and strong. He's playing for obviously a great program in mm-hmm. the University of Denver, the Pioneers. He has a 6-2-1 record, 153 goals against, and a .938 save percentage. So great start to Quentin Miller's season, and we're going to keep an eye on him
Definitely.
Throughout the year.
Just want to make a... This is just one of those things you can't not comment on. In OHL news, there was... If you haven't yet seen the clip, I'm sure you're going to on social media, the clip between Brampton and Oshawa on Friday night with Brampton up 3-0. And one of their defensemen just absolutely out of line, out of bounds. One of the worst, most disgusting plays that we've seen in the junior ranks in quite a while.
At any level. It was the Steelheads defenseman, Luke Dragusica. He was, it kind of sandwiched hit, by a couple of Oshawa general. And we should say Brampton up 3-0, and it was the end of the 4 minutes left thereabouts.
3.5 minutes, something like that. Yeah.
Something like that. The game was over. There was nothing happening. Drasuka got up and slashed Generals player Brady Blasig right in the face. Cut his face. Came dangerously close to his eye. And the Generals player went down and then proceeded to, once he was down, to cross-check him in the back. Drasukica was assessed 5-minute slashing match penalty. And there was the blood all over the ice. Blasik was able to get off the ice on his own power. Didn't return. But it was as ugly as any incident as I've seen. And if there's ever been a play that deserves a lifetime ban from hockey, a lifetime ban from the Ontario Hockey League, a lifetime ban from hockey at any level, it's this one.
I believe he is suspended right now pending review as it is.
This should, the OHL has to send a message because this could have been, this was ugly, but it could have been so, so much worse. It had been players losing an eye or worse. I've not seen anything as bad as this in a long, long time.
And it wasn't an accident. It wasn't he accidentally got a stick up in the face. It was, Dragusica was ticked off about the hit, gets up from behind the goal, goes after Blasig and reaches his stick around to bring it up and smack him right, almost with the blade right in the face. It was absolutely intentional.
And it wasn't a dirty hit that led to this at all.
I mean, like you said, he got kind of sandwiched between two Oshawa players. Sorry if you didn't like that, but it does not give you the right to viciously go after someone with your stick blade up near their eye. It just, zero tolerance policy. That's got to qualify.
The Bruins are in town Friday night, and some fans who have been fans of the Canadiens Bruins for many, many years will remember the Ted Green stick swinging incident. And I don't know. There's probably other examples that folks will come up with, but you never want to see any of that.
No. For the Laval Rocket, they were in Belleville last Sunday afternoon. Actually, kudos to them. They must have heard the fact on this show a few weeks ago that I had said it seems like every time they play in Belleville, they struggle. Well, they actually came up with a win on the road in Belleville this time, winning 3-2 with Philip Meschar scoring, Jared Davidson scoring his 9th of the season, and Laurent Alphand scoring. It was Kakanen in the net making 21 saves. Then you'll recall last week we mentioned that they were going to be playing the Springfield Thunderbirds on Wednesday morning, 10:35 a.m., the Springfield's school day game. Well, I don't think, and would Milan Lucic be in the lineup, and some other notables potentially in the lineup for Springfield? I'm not sure that Laval was.
Alarm clocks didn't go off.
I don't think they were awake yet, because Luke Tuck was the only one who scored, Springfield winning that one 3-1.
Yeah, I don't put much stock in these early morning games. No.
So Laval, through 13 games, has an 8-5-0 record. That's good for 16 points, placing them second overall in the North Division, 8th overall in the AHL. Not too shabby. And they've got, they're on the road again in Hartford on Saturday night at 6 p.m., then they play in Providence against the Providence Bruins at 3:00 on Sunday afternoon. Then they come back for a Wednesday game against Syracuse at Place Belle and a Friday game at Place Belle against Belleville. I actually looked at their schedule. So they play in the course of 8 days. They play Saturday, Sunday this weekend, Wednesday, Friday, and then again on Sunday, I believe, either Saturday or Saturday. They play like 5 games in 8 days. It's a rough schedule for them this week, both on the road and at home. So good luck to the Laval Rocket. The Trois Rivières Lions, they have, through eight games, have accumulated 10 points. They're fifth overall in the North, 21st overall in the ECHL. It's not a slow start. It's not easy to be the defending champs. So they've had a bit of a slow start. We'll see. Hopefully they can open things up here soon.
I guess the news this week from the ECHL was the ECHL players writing an open letter to the ECHL fans. And there's salary negotiations, contract that expired some time ago. The negotiations aren't going well. And the players thought that they would lay out things from their perspective to their fans. And, you know, the ECHL is a tough league. It's really tough. Yeah. There's some good, we covered it extensively. Now Chris G has taken over that portfolio. You both feel for the players. Because the conditions are tough. You can have three games in four nights. You can have the travel is miserable.
The pay is not great.
The pay is awful. So the ECHL players have some legitimate concerns.
Yeah.
And I also feel for the league and the team owners who are trying to make do. It's very affordable to go see an ECHL game, which means they're not bringing in a whole lot of money. ECHL teams have a salary cap under $15,000 a week. They can't pay players that much. The ECHL has made great strides going into markets that don't already have a team, and they're making strides towards ensuring that each NHL team has a corresponding ECHL team. So this is a little more complicated an issue than people can realize, rather than those owners are being nasty or the players are whining, or it's not that simple. This is going to be a difficult one to sort out, and I feel for both sides.
Definitely. Last thing in this segment before we take our first break, just want to touch on some hockey news related to the Winter Olympics. There's two different stories here that we want to mention, and the first of which is Team Canada, Nick Suzuki.
Nick Suzuki is you know, there's probably four or five players vying for three spots, and I think Nick Suzuki, injury issues aside, let's set those aside for now, is really put himself in a good position to be selected to the team.
Absolutely. On the other hand, Cole Caulfield's still a question mark.
Cole Caulfield has, put himself in a position to be under consideration. 12 goals so far this year, just behind Nathan MacKinnon at 14. There's a bunch of guys tied for second. But according to Pierre LeBrun, he said that if the selection were today, Cole Caulfield wouldn't make the team, according to the information he has, and just about the style of play that they want for the Olympics, and the type of makeup of that they want to put together. So that would be tough news for Cole Caulfield, who's off to a great start to his season.
That's true. So that was one story related to the Olympics, is just kind of keeping tabs on Habs potentially making their respective team rosters. The other is the now brewing saga about the ice conditions in Milan this week following the Hockey Hall of Fame inductions. There was, of course, the GM's short GM's meeting, and apparently, Rick, I believe that the NHL was sending a contingent over to Italy to do their own inspection of the ice.
Yeah, we talked about this a month or two back when there were construction delays. The arena itself The officials say it's, you know, a 14,000 seat state-of-the-art arena, but it's not finished. It won't be finished till like into December. And that's atypical for sure. Usually the facilities, new facilities, they like to have them built at least a year before the event to schedule events in them and try them out and deal with things. It's not ready at all. So Gary Bettman was quoted this week, and it seems like the concern is growing. He said, there seems to be some issues, including with the ice. And while the IOC and the IIHF are responsible and have said we have nothing to be concerned about, we will send our own people to take a look, to do the inspection that you said, because the well-being of our players playing in this tournament is the most important thing. And, you know, owners have got to be owners and general managers and agents have got to be very concerned with the fact that that there are problems in the building. That's the thing that they worry when they agree to put their players in a showcase like this. That's not going to do anything for them or their season or their bottom line. They're most worried about injury, and you certainly don't want a defect with the ice or the arena itself, the boards, whatever it is, to cause an injury for one of their players.
No, you never want to see that. So we'll see what happens when the inspection gets done. All right, we are going to take our first break here on the Canadians Connection podcast. You're going to hear an incentive from our friends and sponsors over at DraftKings for you. And then on the other side, when we come back from that, we are digging into our big topic this week, a strong dose of adversity. What is going on with the Montreal Canadiens and where do they take it from here? Let's get into it right after this. You are listening to the Canadiens Connection podcast on Rocket Sports Radio.
The NBA season tips off, and so does DraftKings' newest fantasy game. DraftKings Pick 6 is the easiest way to play for big wins, with every possession giving you a shot at real money. Here's how to play. Just pick more or less on two or more stats and unlock the upside every game brings. Pick 6 is available in Texas, California, Missouri, and more. And new DraftKings customers get $50 in bonus picks with just a $5 entry on your first pick set. Don't just watch basketball, cash in. Download the DraftKings Pick 6 app now and use code THPN. That's code THPN. Play just $5, get $50 in Pick 6 bonus picks. Make the call. Ride the upside. In partnership with DraftKings Pick 6, the crown is yours. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org in Connecticut. Must be 18 plus. Age and eligibility restrictions vary by jurisdiction. Pick 6 not available everywhere, including New York and Ontario. Void where prohibited. One per new customer. Bonus awarded as non-withdrawable Pick 6 bonus picks that expire in 14 days. Limited time offer. See terms at pick6.draftkings.com/promos.
And welcome back to the Canadians Connection podcast right here on Rocket Sports Radio. Once again, my name, Amy Johnson. And hey, if you're not already following me over on X, why don't you do that? You can find my handle at Flyers Rule. And of course, you need to be following Rick Stevens, my wonderful co-host here. He is at Rocket Sports on X. That is our main account. So that's an important one for you to follow if you want to keep up with all of our content across all of our platforms, plus all of the coverage that we offer as well. You can also follow this podcast at Habs Connection. Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, all of that. And really, the most important thing, if I have to ask you to do anything, is just make sure you're subscribed to the podcast. You don't ever want to miss an episode. We're here each and every week all throughout the year. And so whether you are watching on YouTube or whether you are listening on your favorite podcast platform, just hit subscribe and you'll never miss an episode. So this past week, the Montreal Canadiens were hit with a double dose of adversity. when on Friday the club announced Newhook and Gouley out of the lineup for an extended period of time, both having surgery. Gouley, of course, having surgery to repair that partially torn adductor muscle. That happened on Thursday. Newhook went under the knife on Friday in Montreal to repair his fractured ankle from Thursday night's game against Dallas. Really unfortunate in both instances, really. Caden Gouley, as Rick mentioned in the first segment, is one of those kind of really difficult to replace players on the Canadiens roster. You can't just slot somebody in like him who's a carbon copy. And so he's a big piece of the puzzle that's going to be missing for a significant amount of time. Newhook, to his credit, was having a really strong start to the season. He had, 12 points in 17 games and seemed to be really clicking on that new look line of Newhook, Oliver Kapanen, and Ivan Demidov. And so you've got, the veteran, if you want to call him a veteran, we know Newhook isn't that old, but between Kapanen and Demidov, Newhook is kind of the older, more experienced presence on a very important line, getting Kapanen and Demidov going and helping to provide some of that gel. Gouley, on the other hand, is an absolute pillar on the Canadiens defense. And so just like that, whammo, two big pieces of adversity just tossed in the lap of the Canadiens in a way that they weren't expecting.
Well, and it's not just the injuries, huge to key players, but it's not just injuries. In addition to those injury absence, the Canadiens, as we said, right off the top, they've lost four of their last five games. And we were trying to, in last week's show, forecast that there were storm clouds brewing. We hear from our listeners every week and Habs fans. And there was one, and the Rocket Sports text line that we've talked about, 5853 Rocket, is a place where fans like to, it's easy to access. 585-376-2538. Text us anytime. And one of the texts that we got stood out to me, and this is from Joe. It was a 514 number, so in the Montreal area, from Joseph. And Joseph said, 7 to 8 guys on your struggling list? ? And that was, we listed them, or I listed them. No, I'm not going to rope you in on this. I came up with the struggling list, and I said there was Valeno, there was Bolduc, there was Struble, there was Matheson, there's Montembeau. So Joseph said, 7 to 8 guys on your struggling list. Habs are top five. You're not being a very supportive fan. And I guess that's right. Not a supportive fan. Didn't claim to be a supportive fan. This podcast is different than, there's a lot of fan podcasts out there. Fans just get around and sit around and cheerlead the team. And we don't do that. And for those who may be new, here's your warning. Mm-hmm. We're going to be objective. We're going to rely on our sources around the league. We've been doing this, covering the Canadiens for 16 years. We've been doing podcasts for a dozen years. So maybe not a good fan, maybe a good reporter, maybe a good hockey analyst, and that's all we try to be. And the other thing is that if there's a philosophy, it's the Wayne Gretzky philosophy, who says a hockey player plays where the puck is going to be, not where it has been. Mm-hmm. And so we were forecasting that there were some problems. There was some problems coming up that the Canadiens needed to attend to, and that was before the injuries hit.
That's right. So to look forward, we're actually going to look back very, very briefly, because if you listen to last week's show, episode 373 of the Canadiens Connection podcast, if you missed it, go to CanadiansConnection.fm. You can listen to all of our podcasts in our archive. But last week, it was all about each player's versus. not the Habs versus the Bruins or the Habs versus the Dallas Stars, but, you know, Nick Suzuki versus his Iron Man streak, or players and their own individual unseen kind of intangible opponents. Well, that word versus went from being unseen and hidden to being very visible and almost tangible in some ways.
So if you listened to last week's podcast, some of the things that cropped up this week and became obvious and you were prepared. You should have been prepared. That last week's podcast was kind of ahead of its time in forecasting the issues that were going to come to light. And they did kind of all at once.
They did. And so we feel that it kind of forces our hand to say, okay, because just about every storyline we hit on last week became a headline or a topic of discussion this week, let's update it. And let's see how some of those battles turned out. And so we're going to start with what I just mentioned, Nick Suzuki versus his Iron Man streak. And last week, you know, it was more about, you know, can he keep it up? Is that kind of a hidden monster looking over his shoulder, his Iron Man streak? Certain members of certain players and whatnot mentioning to the media that, you know, hey, let's not talk about that. It's kind of bad luck. Players are superstitious. Well, people kept talking about it, Rick.
And Nick Suzuki himself finally answered the question.
I don't really care about the streak. And, you know, I just want to play and help my team. You know, if they let me in, I feel good. So, yeah, I don't think I'm pushing through anything anyone else wouldn't. So, yeah, just trying to be an effective player and help the team win.
So a general kind of answer that a captain might say, but he gave you some information there saying, I don't think I'm pushing through anything anyone else wouldn't. So he's confirming
he's pushing through something
that he's pushing through something. Yeah. But of course, we already knew that. If you're following at Canadians MTL on X, you're going to know the most frequently tweeted item in, this past week or the past. Now it's a little more than a week. Yeah. They have tweeted forward Nick Suzuki will not participate in today's practice brackets therapy day. That's unusual for Nick Suzuki. Very unusual. So he's dealing with something. And this Iron Man streak, is not just about a number. It's about the fact that Nick Suzuki is key to this team. And if he misses any time, it's going to affect the Canadiens' fortunes. It's going to affect certainly his ability perhaps to participate in the Olympics that means, as he said, more to him than anything. And it was one of the things that when we did our preseason predictions, I was very nervous about. And I said that the Canadiens have, you know, the talent to be a playoff team, but I was very worried about the injury bug this season because they haven't experienced significant players out of the lineup for a long period of time. Now that's happening, and we don't want to see that with Nick Suzuki. But obviously, there was that shot block some time ago, and he doesn't, you know, now he's missing practices, and he just doesn't seem to be the same player on the ice.
The next the next opponent we discussed was the media and pundits and whatever constantly trying to liken Ivan Demidov to an iconic former player like Alexei Kovalev or Pavel Datsyuk. You know, who is the best comparison for who Ivan Demidov looks like he's going to be? And we talked about the fact that Demidov is leading all NHL rookies in assists. He's second in points. But teams are starting to figure that out a little bit.
Yeah, it was Nick Suzuki that said, you know, teams respect him, which we found to be interesting given that he was so young and has such little NHL experience. We talked about that in previous weeks. The new piece, and I mentioned it earlier, was the way Dallas treated him. You don't see shadows very often in the NHL anymore. You know, it used to be, if you followed the Canadiens back in the day, Claude Provost was a shadow on a Bobby Hall for Chicago. You don't see that much anymore, but and that isn't exactly what Dallas did, but they just suffocated him. They didn't give him any time. And we're started to see, you know, that that's something new for Demidov to have to deal with. Mm-hmm. And it's something new for Marty St. Louis to have to game plan around. Mm-hmm. And take advantage of.
Absolutely. So that's going to be an ever-evolving one. But we did start to see a new storyline around that emerge this week. The third item that we had discussed last week, unfortunately, was the drama around Jakub Dobish and his emotions, because we talked about how unfortunate it was that he was put in the situation that he was after a tough loss, that he wasn't allowed to deal with. You know, he's young. He's still gaining experience. He puts a lot of pressure on himself, that it was unfortunate that he had to deal with that loss very publicly instead of being able to deal with it privately until he, you know, better learns how to kind of compartmentalize things when he meets the media. And as you had said this last week, Rick, we both agreed that we said the best thing that Marty needs to do is to start Dobish on Saturday night. And he didn't do that. And then he continued to not do that.
Yeah, Canadians made two mistakes. I talked about one, throwing him out to the media. They knew how important that New Jersey game was to him. Last season, he vowed never that he wasn't going to let it happen again. What happened to him in New Jersey, it meant a lot. So of course he was emotional, and there was no reason for him to work through those emotions in public, as we said last week. But then it's obvious what you do as a coach. It's obvious what you do. You throw him right back in the net. Mm-hmm. And Marty St. Louis made a mistake. We're going to tell you when Marty St. Louis does good things. We're going to tell you when he makes mistakes. He made a big mistake in letting Dobish sit for a week, letting Montembeau start those games against Utah and Los Angeles. And it was all the attention is on Montembeau trying to fix his game, and nothing, you know, there was no consideration for Dobish, and there's got to be, you know, this team is building for the future. It's not about a kind of getting to the playoffs this year and then seeing what happens. It's got to be making decisions about being that perennial contender. Dobish is expected to be a part of that. Montembeau is not, and Fowler and whatnot. That was a mistake that didn't need to happen.
And so Dobish sits for a week. This is one of those things. I'm gonna expand on this a little bit here, because here is one of those things where a coach who has had AHL coaching experience would know this, that the best thing for you to do, just like if your team suffers a bad loss, they always say, we love it when it's a back-to-back and you can just get right back on the horse the next day and forget about that bad game the night before because you have to focus on the new thing. It's the same thing in player development. When you have young players who are just starting to get their footing at any level, if they have a moment where they struggle, don't let them sit and stew about it for 2 days, 3 days, 4 days, 5 days, 6 days, 7 days, because then it just snowballs in their mind and it becomes bigger than what it needed to be. So you're right. The correct method of coaching in decision making in that instance would have been to play Dobesh on Saturday night. Okay, fine. He didn't do that. That was a mistake. Then he made another mistake by not playing Dobesh again on Tuesday night. So by the time Thursday rolled around, Dobesh had been worrying on this, chewing on it. It was probably nagging at him all week. You know, yes, the confidence is shaken. And then Montreal goes out, plays a terrible defensive game, and suddenly there's five goals, there's five pucks in the net behind Dobesh. He's now, it's compounding, the bad feelings are compounding. And then to make it worse, Marty pulls him and puts Sam Montembeau in, who Sam Montembeau was useless for the third period as well. It wasn't a goaltending problem. That was an instance that Marty could have decided, you know what? I know it's been five goals, but I'm going to just let him stay in. It's the offense that's not doing it. It's the defense that's not doing it. And this way, he's not going to feel like it's his fault. So we've seen a number of things happen over the course of a week that Marty is making the wrong decisions about Jakub Dobesh. And that is doing nothing but hurting Jakub Dobesh's confidence. And we all know that particularly for a young player, and particularly in the goaltending position, that's a bad confidence is everything.
Yeah.
And well, I'm gonna get to number four before I expand a little bit further. So all of that leads us to, and I'll just say, I hope, you know, fine, okay, great. And I think Marty is making another bad mistake because now after Thursday night's performance, once again, he's not starting Jakub Dobesh. He's going back to Sam Montembeau. What do you think Jakub Dobesh is chewing on in his mind on the bench on Saturday night when Boston's in town? Do you think that he'll be thinking about the fact that when Montembeau went into the crease in the third period on Thursday night against Dallas, that the Bell Center fans were chanting Monty before he had even done anything?
Yeah, that was...
It was disgusting.
Yeah, the Sam Montembeau versus the Bell Center thing. And it was interesting in that game that it happened both ways. It seemed later on in the period, Montembeau made an easy save and he got the Bronx cheer again. Mm-hmm. But it seemed like when he started in the third period, before he had made a save, before a second had ticked off the clock, they were chanting Monty, and a player knows, hey, wait a minute, I haven't done anything. Yeah. This is just sympathy, the sympathy vote. That's not helping anything. And then the very first shot he faced, he looked just awful. Wasn't a high danger shot. So Monty is just, this is not about, I guess the other thing that bothers me a little bit is that a lot of the, you know, talking heads are saying, well, Montembeau's not very good right now and Dobesh is not very good and the Canadians have a goaltending problem. This is not a both sides thing. Jakub Dobesh had a tough start or period, or Sam Montembeau has had a tough season, had a tough preseason. He hasn't had a good game. He's not tracking pucks well. He seems completely lost out there. His record is better than he deserves, to be honest. Mm-hmm. The Canadians have been really helping him out. 4-4-1 record, 361 goals against, 857 save percentage in 9 games. You look at the analytics, 72nd in goals saved above expected. That's second worst in the league at a -8. And insult to injury, ESPN, Greg Wyshynski put out an article this week. The article was the NHL's most shocking player performances 1 month in, and he did shockingly good. And these aren't one game performances. This is a assessment for the month of October. Sam Montembeau was in the shockingly bad category. And Wyshynski wrote this. Montembeau is second worst in the NHL for goals saved above expected. We already said that. Analytically, he's been the worst five-on-five goalie in the league so far this season for netminders with his workload, and has the second worst wins above replacement in the NHL. You can't put all that together. He has been terrible. And that's why, you know, that Jakub Dobish just should have been able to ride his confidence and the streak that he was having, and getting right back in the net when he might have faltered a bit, and let Sam Montembeau work out all of his technical issues in practice, and maybe even a conditioning stint in the AHL, because it's but throwing him out there and letting his team bail him out is not helping Sam Montembeau. It's not helping his relationship with the fans. And we've also talked about the other side of it, is that it's undermining Jakub Dobish. There's a whole pile of negative effects with making, you know, all the emphasis on Sam Montembeau here.
It is. And I think what's the most irritating for me is whatever this agenda that Marty St. Louis and or the Canadians have with Sam Montembeau, get out of your own way and just stop it. Because unfortunately, if you listen to, as you call them, the talking heads or the mainstream media in Montreal, if you listen and simply consume the things that they put out day after day after day, particularly this past week, they will tell you over and over and over again, Sam Montembeau is the goaltender of the future for the Montreal Canadiens. No. Sam Montembeau is the way to go. Jakub Dobish is simply a backup. Don't worry about him. Focus on Sam Montembeau. Get Sam Montembeau back to tip-top shape. You cannot listen. This is where I get very angry, that the mainstream media feeds these narratives to fans. And a lot of times fans just listen to maybe one or two of the big analysts or reporters and whatnot, and they trust them to be telling them the truth and take what they say for gold. Well, that's not really the narrative. That's the narrative that they all want to put out about Sam Montembeau. Please indulge me just for a moment, because maybe you're one of those who's thinking, I don't know, everybody, you know, all the mainstream guys in Montreal keep saying, no, it's Sam, it's Sam, it's Sam. Maybe I'm wrong to think that they should be riding Jakub Dobish right now. You're not wrong, and you are not alone. Because when you go onto social media, you will see the fan response. This is a sampling of fan response on Twitter on Thursday night, when a reporter, a mainstream reporter, tweeted that Montembeau was going to start for the third period for Montreal. You had replies like, Marty needs to sit down and pick a goalie. This mess is at his hands. Dobish was hot and he royally screwed it up by putting Monty in. Cool. Next time, try doing some coaching during the period. Well, it was good while it lasted. MSL ruined our season with the goalie usage. Someone else saying, I hate this peewee coach. Then said reporter tweets out that Montembeau then allows the first shot that he faces. And the fans say, Montembeau is an NHL backup at best. If Fowler doesn't turn into a legit starter in his rookie season, the team's goaltending is going to be in big trouble. MSL destroyed Dobesh's confidence. MSL ruined things with his rotation. There's still time to tank the season. Oh, the Monty special, giving up the first goal on a first shot, as is tradition. You can't make this up. Brutal. Bad coaching. I mean, it goes on and on and on. And what you're seeing now is the fans are getting really frustrated with this decision making because there is this agenda in the organization, it seems, or with Marty, it seems, that they've just got to try to make Sam Montembeau the star. And they're shooting themselves in the foot doing it.
Yeah, and this, I mean, we've talked to the press, and we know their feelings, and we know their biases, and they want somebody that they can talk to and present to fans in their own language, and that's their only priority. It doesn't really matter what happens on the ice, and that's why you get the kind of really skewed, biased, unrealistic kind of reports, and it comes up. We talked about Mike Matheson being labeled by the Montreal media as the best defensive defenseman in the NHL, and of course that's, as one of our commenters said, Chris, that's absolutely silly. It's just dumb. But drumming up this. Matheson needs a $7 million contract. He's going to be the Canadiens' defensive defenseman. He's going to be the Canadiens' primary penalty killer on defense. And so far, this transition from this smooth skating player who's has the stamina to play a lot of minutes, not necessarily all that competently, he's just not. He's not excelling as a defensive player and a penalty killer, even though he gets praised more than he deserves, obviously.
Yeah, absolutely. Just so frustrating, and I can, on all levels with a lot of different aspects right now, and I can certainly understand why the fans are really starting to get vocal with their pushback about it.
Yeah.
The bonus opponent that we discussed last week was Kent Hughes versus Temptation, talking about how, you know, Canadians have some decent cash at hand. They have trade assets to work with, and wondering if Hughes would give in to any temptation to fill immediate needs on the roster, or if he could continue to stick to the plan to build a lineup methodically that could generate sustainable, perennial success. Well, there's a report out now this week. Maybe we're going to get an answer to this question sooner rather than later, that the Canadians are interested in acquiring former Toronto Maple Leafs forward David Kampf.
We primed you for this last week. You know, the Canadians had, and nothing is more illustrative than the names that have been tossed out. We've heard, that Kent Hughes should be interested in. We've heard Sidney Crosby over and over and over again, and Panarin and Tage Thompson more recently. And then this week, you know, you need immediate gratification. You need to immediately fill a hole. How about David Kampf? And if you miss the David Kampf story, he's been with the Leafs for 4 years. That all came to an end on Friday. He was placed on unconditional waivers. He cleared unconditional waivers. His contract was terminated. This goes back to the beginning of the season. As I said, 4 years with the Leafs, he's 30 years old. He was placed on waivers at the end of training camp, cleared waivers, assigned to the Marlies on the 4th of October. Kampf, the good soldier, played four games with the Marlies. Then he got frustrated that, it was looking like he was going to be there longer than he wanted to be. So he walked away from the Marlies, and it was the Leafs who suspended him on November 2nd, and then which led to him becoming, with the contract being terminated and him becoming a free agent. So this one is, why would you want a 30-year-old defensive-minded forward? Well, okay, he kills penalties. The Canadians are going to need that with Alex Newhook out. He's pretty good on the face-offs. Canadians need that. A left shot forward. Well, the Canadians have all righties left because it was Newhook that was the only left shot face-off guy so far. The others are all right-handed: Suzuki, Evans, Dock, and Kapanen. So it was, and Newhook wasn't taking all the faceoffs, but the only left shot player to be taking faceoffs on a regular basis. So the Canadians could sign this player as a free agent without giving up assets. The thing is that there are four or five other teams interested in signing him, and those teams include the Wild, the Canucks, the Penguins. It's an interesting climb down from a Sidney Crosby, but maybe a practical solution for the short term.
And can Kent Hughes, should he resist the temptation? Should he step away from the checkbook? Or would this be a smart stopgap with an unexpected Newhook injury? Like, there's a lot to debate there, but it immediately brings into the headlines that hidden opponent we talked about, Kent Hughes versus the temptation for a quick fix, for a quick Band-Aid. And
Kent Hughes has said he's not going to be bringing in people that are going to create barriers for his for a player who could be called up from Laval. Now Newhook being out of the lineup has created a situation, an opportunity for Davidson. But if you acquire a Kampf and you look at a player like Joe Valeno, who's really not done anything this season, is he taking a place? Is there someone in the organization who could help out? Those are the kinds of discussions that are going on. But Kampf is attractive both in faceoffs and with respect to penalty killing, because if Newhook's not killing penalties, then you know what that means. Nick Suzuki is killing penalties, which he's very good at. But if he's already some sort of injury going on, do you want him playing those extra minutes? And the Canadians have got to get better on the penalty kill. They're 17th on the penalty kills so far this season.
Not good. Last week, we also had some extra kind of hidden opponents that we rattled off at the end of the segment. And they all, many of them actually ended up being relevant this week, with even some new ones cropping up. First up, it was Oliver Kapanen versus the second guessers. We talked about how, you know, people didn't seem to want to give Kapanen a chance, that despite the fact that he's just been lights out since the beginning of the season, people are still really easily dismissive of him, like it's a fluke, like it's nothing to concern ourselves with, and that he shouldn't be given much attention or concern. But
make the same mistake as you did with Dobish, pulling him away from Demidov. Demidov, Newhook, Kapanen, those three players are fourth, fifth, and seventh on the team's scoring list. And if you look at Kapanen and Newhook, the most productive forwards at 5-on-5 this season, they both have 9 points. Demidov has 7 points. So I think for now, and we see that Marty's going to keep Kapanen and Demidov together for now and add Doc to that line. So,
which is a smart decision.
I think so. Absolutely.
Which is a smart decision.
And credit to Marty on this.
Yes.
But he's going against all of those second guessers. And we think that's a good decision.
Because those second guessers want Bolduc on that line. And we're going to talk about that in a little bit. But so as we said, we will criticize Marty where we feel it's warranted, but we will praise him. And I do believe keeping Kapanen and Demidov together right now is a smart move. You had mentioned, we had mentioned last week, Joe Valeno versus his work ethic, because Joe Valeno's work ethic hasn't exactly been dazzling so far this season. But hey, why not reward him with some special ice time anyway?
Yeah, it might have just been the circumstances.
And
Newhook out. No goals, no assists, -8, I think. He's not been very good. And I think he can spend some time in the press box, and you want to bring another guy up, That's fine.
And we're mentioning that because Marty St. Louis did give him some power play shifts on Thursday.
Yeah.
But as we say,
not as a reward. Let's hope it wasn't.
Let's hope
it wasn't
a reward. There are mitigating circumstances, we think. Let's not see Joe Valeno on the power play.
Yeah.
A new one has cropped up this week that we didn't have on the list last week, but it's becoming one of those hidden opponents that's getting more and more visible, and that's Arbor Jacki versus his reputation.
Well, the Canadians have been playing heavy teams. Los Angeles and Dallas are heavy teams. Maybe you can put Boston in that category too, and we'll see what happens on Saturday night. But who, and we said that they're missing Gouley, who can provide that physical, intimidating presence in the back end. Jacki, I think, has been overall, at least lately, playing better than Jaden Struble, and Struble's taken some bad penalties. But as far as being the sheriff on the ice, as far as being the intimidating force on the ice, I think a little bit of the shine's off there. Would you say that he's lost his last three fights? Well, I'd at least say he hasn't won his last three fights. Sam Carrick, a much smaller guy with the Rangers, went toe-to-toe with Arbor Jacki. That was after the hit on Hudson that Jacki felt he had to step in on. The fight again during the Philly game against Nicholas Deslauriers, you have to give that decision to Deslauriers. Arbor Jacki took some shots to the head, and that decision goes to Deslauriers. Interestingly enough, the Deslauriers also fought with the other Jacki, Florian, in a preseason game. And then the latest skirmish was against Dallas, and that was after Newhook was tripped by Ilya Lyubushkin. And Ilya Lyubushkin's not a guy who, with the fisticuffs, I guess Jacki wanted to go for some retribution on Newhook, and Ilya Lyubushkin, strong, just put Jacki in a headlock, and that's where it ended.
Yeah.
That reputation of being an intimidating force is been a little bit tarnished recently.
Yeah. So we'll see if he can kind of get that back. Not saying he needs to be a dirty player, but he does need to get back to being a as you say, an intimidating player and somebody that guys on the opposition are going to think twice about facing off with. We mentioned Zach Bolduc, and last week we mentioned that Zach Bolduc's hidden opponent was his defensive zone play, because it's just been abysmal.
And it's not just us saying that. It was Marty saying that he needs to improve on his details, and that's why Bolduc hasn't been receiving the ice time. But the other part of it is his bread and butter is his offensive game, and that's dried up completely. Three goals in his first three games, and then pointless in his last seven, 2 points in his last 13 games. And you can blame the fact that you can blame his line mates all you want, but he's not driving his line at all. Mm-mm. And that's a problem. And listen, you want to get a guy going by putting him with Demidov or whatever. Well, no. Be careful that you're going to, if you then cool off a player who has been going well. That was one that we touched on last week.
That's right. And the last thing that we had mentioned last week was that Jared Davidson didn't want to have a bad opponent with his cell phone signal, because we talked about how successful he has had. He has been in the AHL this season, just been lights out playing for Laval. And sure enough, I guess the cell phone signal was pretty strong from Montreal to Laval this week, because he did receive his call-up.
Congratulations to him.
Absolutely. So, okay. So that took everything that we discussed last week, and it's amazing that almost every single item, actually every single item and then some new ones, all were relevant this past week, all needed an update, all took things kind of to the next level. And so now it's okay. They are the youngest team in the league. So we get it that there's going to be struggles. There's going to be obstacles. There's going to be adversity. There's going to be a two steps forward, one step back moments, those types of things. To traverse this kind of adversity, to traverse this stage of a rebuild, and to traverse how to get through a season like this with a team that consists of such young players, the Canadians need to have a very solid, stabilizing force to help combat all of the things that you know, the hockey gods are going to throw at them and are throwing at them, all of this adversity. And that brings us to Marty St. Louis.
Yeah, I think, and just Marty St. Louis for sure is the emotional leader. He is the leader as head coach. He decides the direct, all of that. But leadership matters, especially when you're experiencing adversity. And you look at the entire leadership structure of the Canadians. You have Suzuki, who is still there and saying the right things, but we know that he's hurting. You have Gouley, who we said is a strong leader and was looking forward to really breaking out with respect to leadership this season on and off the ice. He has been out for quite some time and is going to add to that. Brendan Gallagher wears a letter. Brendan Gallagher has no goals, 7 assists, but no goals this season. Mike Matheson, he also wears a letter and is expected to lead. He's in transition and is not comfortable with the new role that he's being presented. And then you mentioned Marty St. Louis. And I guess we have to keep reminding ourselves, yes, he's been around for a while now, but we have to remind ourselves about his lack of coaching experience. Mm-hmm. And the thing we have to remember is that Marty St. Louis has never coached a team that is expected to make the playoffs. He hasn't been in that situation before, and it's an additional pressure. And it's not us that are noticing this and pointing this out. It's Marty as well.
Well, I think the biggest challenge is, you know, it'd be much easier if the game was played 5-on-5 for 60 minutes. You know, the biggest challenge comes when there's, you know, PK par play, like, you know, like the special team kind of breaks the rhythm a little bit, and now you get caught in trying to get back in your lines, not lose guys, who's on the ice on the other team. It's a juggling a little bit, but I feel like it's something that I'm striving to get better at. And I feel the deeper your team, the harder it is, and so to speak, historically, guys that play on the fourth line, you know, they played 6-7 minutes. You can give other guys, but the league is kind of, you know, the league is not there anymore. And obviously, as deep of a group as we have right now, I have to allocate ice time. And, you know, obviously merit is always going to be part of it, but I feel like I've probably, some guys deserve probably a little more. And I got to find ways to do that, you know, but also still trying to win a game and manage matchup and stuff. So it's something I feel that I'm gonna keep learning this year, and I feel it's the first year I really have this kind of situation that I think I'm gonna keep learning on the fly.
So he uses the word, this is the first time that he's had a deeper team. Translation, a team that's expected to make the playoffs. And that he talked about, he's very open, and I give him credit for being very open, and this reminder to us that he is so inexperienced in these different situations. He says he's going to try to learn. He's striving to get better. But you know, it's kind of, hey, by the way, that that it isn't. It'd be so much easier if the game didn't have any penalties and if it was all just 5-on-5, and I didn't have to really think about it and just kind of rotate the lines. And so complicated because you not only have to manage, you know, who you're sending out, but you have to think about who the other team is sending out. These are all things that coaches who have come up through the ranks, who have coached junior, who have coached in the AHL, they've learned those lessons. Marty hasn't. And we know that there's been learning all the way through. He, you know, the offensive system that he put in, and that he was tied to, and that had worked so well with his kids. And he said, we need to play more than he threw that out after a while, the defensive system, that he thought was going to work. He threw that out and he's getting, you know, experience, on the fly in the job. And so some of these decisions that he's making, we have to remind ourselves, that he hasn't done this before. We have players who are struggling. We also have Marty, who is struggling at times working through these things.
Which begs the question, and it's a question that we were asking even last season, wondering, is Marty St. Louis going to be the coach that can take this team to its next level as the team improves and becomes more competitive? And he's admitting, I don't necessarily completely know how to coach a team like this yet. And I agree with you, credit to him for his honesty and transparency about that. At the same time, that also makes me think, is that fair to the team who has been suffering so much for the past few years, working so hard to get here, and now are they going to get out-coached because their coach doesn't have the experience to take them through this? I hope that's not the case. It's a little concerning. I mean, there's times that he's tries to be a little cheeky about it. He had this to say in a different press conference about how it was easier coaching youth hockey.
You know, at the youth level, it was easy. You just rolled the lines. Everybody played the power play. It was fun. It was easy. Let's go. You know, at the NHL level, you know, you got to be a little more calculated. And, you know, I feel I've come a long way and I got ways to go.
So just as, you know, Marty St. Louis is having to have some tolerance for development mistakes of his young players and seems to want to lean in the direction of veterans, you know, the organization and fans, how much tolerance are they going to have for Marty's development issues and, mm-hmm. and him, this learning curve, and trying to catch up? The one thing that I'll just point out, that we've interviewed hundreds of coaches at different levels, over the many years, one thing stands out constantly to me. And that is, when Marty's asked post game, you know, about a situation, about how he feels about the overall team's performance, his standard answer is, I don't know, I got to check the tape and then I'll be able to tell you. That's, you know, okay, we'll give you a pass in your first year or whatever. That's something we can tell you that doesn't happen with many other coaches. More often than not in all situations, but more often than not, the experienced coaches who've experienced the game from behind the bench at all levels see things from behind the bench that I wouldn't have thought they could see. You know, we're up in the press box and can see things sometimes, and you think, how in the world did the coach know that? You can ask them about something and they say, yeah, that was prior to this and this happened and this situation and the puck went and missed the check. And, that you're talking about processing You're talking about a player being ready to process the game at an NHL speed. Well, the coach has to process the game at NHL speed too, because your computer has to be just as good as the players, to use a Marty phrase, or better. You have to know, and in Marty pointed out here how complicated it is. You have to know about your usage of your players, how fresh they are, how effective they've been in the game, how effective they've been against particular players on the other side, who the other coaches is throwing out, who he's liable to throw out, figuring out patterns. Your computer has to process at NHL speed just as quickly or more than the players. And I think we're saying that that's a work in progress yet for Marty. Not only we're saying that, but he's admitting that's the case as well. Is that a criticism? Well, if so, Marty's saying he's got to play a bit of catch up here.
And so what does all of that mean for the Canadians right now? Well, they have to come up with something better on Saturday night. First of all, they've got to shake off this two game disaster that they went through this past week, and they have to build on things one game at a time. And I think it's going to get a little dicey. I think it's not going to be easy. And we're going to see in real time how players respond, how the coach responds, how the fans respond. There's a lot at stake. And there's, compared to the start of the season, it's amazing what a difference a month can make.
And again, we warned you this was coming, that the Canadians had a very easy schedule in terms of the strength of their opponents in October. Mm-hmm. The only two teams who made the playoffs from last year's season, they lost to both of them, and they beat up on the bottom feeders, and that's good. You want to bank those points, and they did that. But tougher competition was coming. They eased themselves again. The schedule makers were kind to them in tougher opponents, but a home heavy schedule in November. But it's we're starting to see some signs where maybe their record doesn't necessarily reflect where the team's at right now.
So this week's Canadians Connection question of the week for you, it's a two-parter. Do you think that the Habs' identity is solid enough to withstand this stretch of adversity? Or has this recent adversity exposed some weaknesses? I'll read that for you again. Do you think the Habs' identity is solid enough to withstand this stretch of adversity, or has this recent adversity exposed weaknesses? It'll be very interesting to see how you feel about this. Text us at 5853-ROCKET. That's 5853-ROCKET. Drop us a comment on YouTube over at insidethecanadians.com. You could also drop us a comment on Spotify if that is how you listen to the show, or you can hit us up on the socials at Habs Connection on X, Facebook, and Instagram. We're going to take your best responses and read them on next week's show. And coming up right after this quick message from our sponsors over at Rakuten, we are going to do just that about last week's Canadians Connection question of the week. We're going to bring you some of your responses to that. So stay with us. You're listening to the Canadians Connection podcast on Rocket Sports Radio.
The holidays are here, and that means it's the most wonderful time of the year to save with Rakuten. Use Rakuten to stack cash back at your favorite stores on top of holiday sales. That's savings on savings. With Rakuten, you can get cash back on gifts for everyone on your list, from toys for the kids, to kitchen gear for the person who loves to cook, to electronics for everyone. You can even save on something for yourself. Just shop the stores you love, like Adidas, Levi's, Old Navy, Lenovo, LG, Sephora, Best Buy, Dyson, or Lego, and cash back is automatically added to your account. and you can choose to get paid via Interac e-transfer, PayPal, or check. Join for free today and get a new member bonus after minimum qualifying purchases. Just go to Rakuten.ca, download the app, or install the browser extension. That's Rakuten. Terms and conditions apply.
And welcome back to episode 374 of the Canadians Connection podcast on Rocket Sports Radio. Don't forget to subscribe to the show if you have not done so already. You can subscribe on your favorite podcast platform, however you're listening to the show right now. You also want to subscribe to our YouTube channel over at InsideTheCanadians.com. Be sure you are checking out HockeyHotStove.com, clicking on the Canadians logo for all of our written coverage. Of course, the great thing that you could do for us if you're looking to be generous, takes just a second of your time, but hit that share button and share this episode with your Habs friends and followers. Don't forget to get us your answers to this week's Canadians Connection question of the week. Do you think the Habs' identity is solid enough to withstand this stretch of adversity? Or has the adversity exposed weaknesses? We want to hear from you. Last week, we asked you another two-part question. We said, who do you think is fighting the toughest personal battle on the Canadiens roster right now and why? And we asked, what's the toughest kind of opponent for a player to overcome? Is it pressure? Is it fan expectations? Is it injuries? Is it self-doubt? Kind of all packaged into one there. And we had a great reply on YouTube from at P. Moran Fidelt. He says, I feel like Sam Montembeau is fighting the toughest battle. It isn't just the possibility of losing the starting goalie spot, but a spot on the Team Canada Olympic team. He's fighting against the fans' opinions on his play, as well as his own. He needs to be comfortable with his own playing style before he can move on. I really hope I don't sound like I'm sandbagging Sam Montembeau, but I'd love to see him make a comeback with this playing style and get out of this slump. With the win against Utah, I hope that starts building his confidence back up. I think the hardest versus opponent that a player can have is that of himself and his own worth to the team. If someone is negative about their playing style and the effort they put into team play, all the other demons like fan reactions and the media will just multiply it. You need to focus on yourself and give 100% and feel like you gave your all before you can move on to the other challenges of the game.
Really great comment.
Very good comment.
Very thoughtful. He answered both parts of the question. And that's our top comment this week for sure.
Absolutely. So thank you for your comment. Keep them coming. Really love to see some well thought out defensible opinions, and that's really great. So yes, this week we've got Sam Montembeau taking up residence between the pipes on Saturday night when Boston comes to Montreal to take on the Canadiens at the Bell Center. Then Monday night, it's another Amazon Prime in Canada Monday night game. Montreal will travel to Columbus to take on the Blue Jackets Monday night at 7:30. Then they'll have a couple of days of game-free action before they come home to the Bell Center for Thursday night's matchup against the Washington Capitals at the Bell Center at 7 p.m. So Boston, Columbus, Washington are on tap for this week. Let's hope it goes better than last week did. Boy. We'd love to see a little bit of a turnaround here. And then we'll be back next Saturday, November 22nd, for the next episode of the Canadians Connection podcast. We hope to see you there. Thank you, as always, for listening to the Canadians Connection podcast on Rocket Sports Radio.
Click subscribe so you never miss an episode of Canadians Connection. Follow us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at Rocket Sports.